It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Ebola deaths now exceed 5,100 in Mali. Dozens quarantined with four new cases of the deadly virus. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The World Health Organization says global Ebola fatalities are now in excess of 5,100 with over 14,000 known cases. The UN Special Envoy on the disease, David Nabarro, says while the rate of infection is slowing in areas, the end of the outbreak is not yet in sight.
Although we've got some signs of positive progress, they are small signs. And there's not, at the moment, enough certainty about what is happening for us to be able to say that we know the trajectory towards the end of the outbreak.
The WHO says steep instances of the deadly virus are still being reported in Sierra Leone. In Mali, more than 90 people, including UN peacekeepers, have been quarantined after a 25-year-old nurse died of Ebola. She treated a Muslim imam from Guinea who died and whose highly contagious body was touched and prepared for burial at a mosque in Bamako. There are believed to be at least four new Ebola cases in that West African country. In Liberia, U.S. Ambassador Deborah Malik says despite actions of international health workers and U.S. troops, the number of Ebola cases there continues to rise.
The numbers of cases continue to increase. We are not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination. Clearly, the rate of increase is much lower than it has been over the last couple of months. For the moment, we need more treatment units. We need more personnel to help treat patients. And so we still have a long way to go in this fight.
The numbers of U.S. military personnel in Liberia will likely top out at just under 3,000. They're constructing treatment centers to isolate and treat Ebola patients. This is VOA News. In Sierra Leone, hundreds of health workers went on strike Wednesday over unpaid risk allowances the government had promised to fund. They work at one of the country's few Ebola treatment centers. Some of those workers did return to their jobs Wednesday after being given promises they would be paid. In Monrovia, former British Prime Minister Tony Blair met President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf while on a tour of Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. He said $2 billion will be necessary over the next few years to build more resilient public health services, provide basic infrastructure, and create jobs. In Freetown Wednesday, British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond announced plans for hundreds of Ebola treatment beds within weeks.
Well, we've been in here for a couple of months now, working hard with the Sierra Leoneans, getting the Sierra Leone government to make the changes that are necessary in order to deliver the command and control system, providing British military and British civilian support where appropriate. And we are getting on top of this.
A British Army spokesman said 100-bed treatment centers in five towns will be completed by the end of the month. In Washington, Secretary of Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell testified before Congress Wednesday about an Obama administration request for more than $6 billion in emergency Ebola aid.
We believe we have the right strategy in place, both at home and abroad. And the strategy is designed around four core principles. The first is to strengthen our domestic preparedness. And while we may see additional cases, we are confident that we can limit the number of cases in the United States.
She said USAID
already. To stop the epidemic at its source in West Africa.
Secretary Burwell said USAID already had been spent, has begun to show fragile and fluid progress to contain the outbreak. U.S. researchers have developed a single-dose needle-free Ebola vaccine that protects monkeys against infection for more than 4 months. The vaccine administered through the nose, protecting the primates via the respiratory tract and under-the-tongue formulation of the vaccine is also under development. In Nigeria, a female suicide bomber blew herself up and wounded at least three others at a teacher's training college in western Nigeria. Meanwhile, according to the French press agency, Monday's suicide bombing of a secondary school in Yobe State in the northeast has risen to 58, with nearly 120 wounded. No one has claimed responsibility for either attack, but suspicion has fallen on the militant group Boko Haram. The United States Wednesday expressed deep concern by allegations of mass rape by the Sudanese military in North Darfur. It says UN access to the village of Tabit was initially denied and then, when allowed, closely supervised by Sudanese security officials. It calls on Khartoum to allow unhindered and full access by UN agencies to the area. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Security Council urged to extend the mandate of the UN peacekeeping force in Liberia.
In the current circumstances, we are of the view that it would be appropriate to extend the mandate of UNMIL until September 2015, until such time as the appropriate health authorities inform that the Ebola crisis is over.
Hervé Lassus is head of UN peacekeeping. The U.S. military is scaling back its Ebola response deployment to West Africa. Mali's capital goes on lockdown as the country confirms its second Ebola case. And a court will decide whether the transfer of power to Zambian Vice President Guy Scott was illegal.
We have been pushing, first of all, for a new constitution that can allow for smooth transfer of power from the incumbent president in case of death like this one.
Louis Mwape is executive secretary of the Civil Society Consortium in Zambia. The ICC case against former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba nears conclusion, but the judges want to bring other charges. And the prosecutor in the corruption trial of former Senegalese President Abdoulaye Wade's son has been removed. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN peacekeeping chief is urging the Security Council to extend the mandate of its 7,000-member peacekeeping force in Liberia as the Ebola crisis continues to strain national institutions and threaten gains made since that country's civil war ended in 2003. From the United Nations, viewers Margaret Bashir has more.
Head of UN peacekeeping Hervé Lassus told the Security Council on Wednesday that plans to continue to gradually draw down the mission have been put on hold as Liberia struggles to cope with an Ebola outbreak that has killed more than 2,800 people.
In the current circumstances, we are of the view that it would be appropriate to extend the mandate of UNMIL until September 2015 while taking forward the set of recommendations on political issues and deferring consideration of the drawdown of troops and police until such time as the appropriate health authorities inform that the Ebola crisis is over.
UNMIL is the acronym by which the UN mission in Liberia is known. The mission has been in the West African country for more than a decade, helping the authorities rebuilding and developing capacity of state institutions and maintaining law and order. In September, the Security Council renewed the mission only until the end of this year, but said it intended to further extend it through September 2015. A council resolution authorizing an extension will have to be adopted before December 31st. Liberia's UN Ambassador Marjan Kamara welcomed the proposed extension. She said her government would like to see UNMIL extended for a full year and asked the council to postpone considering adjusting the mission's work.
We humbly suggest that a declaration by WHO that Liberia is Ebola-free should provide an opportunity for the council to authorize a comprehensive assessment of the conditions on the ground. As was the case in the past, the outcome of such an assessment would guide further action by the council.
Council members are likely to take into consideration the impact of the Ebola crisis on the political and security situation in deciding on the length of the mandate extension. Weak national institutions have been overwhelmed by the crisis, the economy is struggling, and schools have shut. A government-imposed 90-day state of emergency expired this week, and it is not clear yet whether it will be extended. The health crisis has also affected the electoral process with the cancellation of legislative elections in October. Liberian authorities are considering whether to reschedule them for next month if the virus's spread is under control. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The U.S. military says it is scaling back its planned Ebola response deployments to West Africa from 4,000 to 3,000 troops. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has details.
Major General Gary Valesky, who heads the U.S. military's response to the Ebola outbreak, said in a call to reporters at the Pentagon from Liberia, the United States does not need 4,000 troops to fight Ebola in West Africa. He said the troop total will increase from about 2,200 today to just under 3,000 by mid-December.
There's a lot of capacity here that we didn't know about before, and so that enabled us to reduce the forces that we thought we originally had to bring.
The general says the approximately 3,000 troop team will remain heavy on engineers, medical providers, and trainers. U.S. Ambassador to Liberia Deborah Malik says the rate of increase in Ebola cases is much lower than it has been over the past couple of months. But she warned more still needs to be done.
The numbers of cases continue to increase. We are not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination.
The ambassador told reporters Liberia needs more treatment units and more personnel to help treat Ebola patients. The World Health Organization has reported about 14,000 cases of Ebola since the outbreak began. The organization announced Wednesday the number of people who have died from the virus now has passed 5,000. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Mali confirmed its second case of Ebola after a health worker in Bamako died on Tuesday. The new case came a day after the World Health Organization said it had released 25 of the more than 100 people in isolation who were believed to have been in contact with the country's first victim, a two-year-old girl from Guinea. Katerina Hoya reports from Bamako.
More than 90 people were quarantined across the Mali capital on Wednesday after a 25-year-old male nurse died of Ebola, having treated a Guinea man, a Muslim imam from the border town of Kuremale, who died from Ebola-like symptoms that were not recognized at the time of his death. Health workers immediately began monitoring dozens of family members and medical staff. They also searched Bamako for those who helped bury the corpse, not knowing the body was still highly contagious. Mali is the sixth West African nation to report Ebola during the world's worst ever outbreak of the disease. The country must now map a new group of contacts to this recent case. The initial group, linked to the death of a two-year-old girl who succumbed to the virus last month, were just released from their 21-day quarantine on Tuesday. Health authorities confirmed Mali's second Ebola case had no connection to the two-year-old victim who had displayed symptoms while traveling through the country by bus, including Bamako, on her return from neighboring Guinea. The areas quarantined in Bamako include the Clinique Pasteur, where the latest victim worked, the mosque where the imam's body was washed, and the houses where the nurse lived and the imam stayed. Clinique Pasteur is one of Bamako's most trusted and frequented health facilities. Patients arriving at the clinic early Wednesday were turned away by police. Moments later, armored vehicles from the UN peacekeeping mission to Mali, MINUSMA, drove up outside the building. Most nurses and doctors had gone home when the clinic was quarantined. Concern is growing over the time it took between the death of the imam and the steps needed to contain the deadly disease being put in place. Mali shares an 800-kilometer border with Guinea, which alongside Liberia and Sierra Leone have been the worst affected by an Ebola outbreak that has killed nearly 5,000 people this year. Katrina Hoye for VOA News in Bamako.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 13th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, and Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. In Senegal, the state has removed the prosecutor in the corruption trial of Karim Wade, the son of former President Abdoulaye Wade. The action taken in Dakar on Tuesday is the latest turn in what has been a tense and politically charged trial. Christian Ruby reports from inside the courtroom in Dakar.
Special Prosecutor Alouine Ndao was relieved of his duties Tuesday. He apparently got the news via text message while he was in court. The judge called a recess due to an emergency. The trial will resume December 1st. Ndao has been leading the investigation and prosecution of Karim Wade that opened shortly after his father Abdoulaye Wade was voted out of office in March 2012. Karim Wade managed a hefty government portfolio as minister under his father. The state accuses him of illegally amassing $240 million via offshore companies and foreign bank accounts. The Justice Ministry has not explained why it removed the prosecutor, but some speculate he was preparing to investigate other officials based on evidence from the Wad trial. Senegalese political analyst Ali Njai says removing him was a risky move for the state.
The fact that the government itself fired its own special procurator has undermined the credibility of the government, evidence in a lot of people in the public opinion. It is about to show that the government is not well prepared to investigate or trial Karim Wad, and it looks like they don't know what to do pretty much.
Wade's lawyers have called the case a political witch hunt since the beginning. The government said it is part of larger efforts to increase accountability in the spending of public funds. Karim Wad has been in jail since April. He has a vocal contingent of supporters in the courtroom every day. Free Karim, free Karim, they chant during the breaks. The same thing is spray painted on random buildings around Dakar. Still, Karim Wad was not historically popular among Senegalese. He suffered a humiliating defeat in 2009 when he ran for mayor of Dakar. Protesters who took to the streets in 2012 to protest his father's re-election bid accused Abdoulaye Wade of trying to put his son into power. Senegal is trying the younger Wade in a special court, the Court to Repress Illicit Enrichment, also known by its French acronym, the CRI. The court requires that the accused justify his wealth. Wade's lawyer says this is fundamentally unfair, that it treats the accused as guilty until proven innocent. The trial started in July and has routinely gotten bogged down in heated debates between the lawyer and the lead judge. Fewer than 10 of the 97 expected witnesses have taken the stand. Each witness is questioned by the prosecutor, then the defense attorneys, and finally by Wade himself. It can take days. Wade often uses his time to interrogate the court, not the witness. He complains that he does not have access to evidence. The judge then cuts him off and tells a guard to return him to his seat. Witness testimony has varied widely. Some witnesses, such as Patricia Legjup, Wade's notary, refused to answer questions. A key sticking point is the absence of Wade's alleged accomplice, Lebanese businessman Bipo Borghi. He was hospitalized during his testimony in September. The court eventually accepted that he be evacuated to France for treatment. The court has yet to rule on his request for an additional 45-day medical leave. Some speculate that Borghi, a French citizen, will not return at all. Wade's lawyers say Borghi is a key witness, and without him, Wade cannot have a fair trial. The prosecutor and the court have not commented publicly since the trial opened. If convicted, Wade could face 10 years in prison and lose his rights as a Senegalese citizen. Kristen Roby for VOA News, Dakar.
The four-year-long trial of former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba is finally wrapping up in The Hague, but the story is not over. ICC judges want another trial, this time targeting both Bemba and his legal team for allegedly tampering with justice. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
Dès l'année 1999, Jean-Pierre Bemba, à la tête du MLC,
Closing statements continue through Thursday in the trial of 52-year-old Jean-Pierre Bemba, a former vice president and warlord from the Democratic Republic of Congo. He faces five counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity for atrocities committed by his private MLC army in the neighboring Central African Republic. The alleged acts took place between October 2002 and March 2003. They include murder, rape, and pillaging, as Bemba's rebels helped put down a coup against the CAR's former president, Ange-Félix Patassé. The prosecution, which took the floor first, described some of the alleged atrocities.
MLC troops committed widespread rapes with complete impunity during the conflict, and they did so in areas under their control. MLC troops raped victims in front of their family members. They sometimes forced one family member to rape another. Sons were sometimes forced to rape their mothers in front of their fathers. MLC troops raped wives in front of their husbands. They raped children in front of their parents. This was how Jean-Pierre Bemba's MLC troops carried out their rape campaign in the Central African Republic.
Bemba has pleaded not guilty to the charges. His lawyers argue his fighters were no longer under his command once they crossed into CAR. A verdict is not expected until next year. Regardless of the judgment, his days at the ICC are not over. On Tuesday, the court ordered both Bemba and members of his legal team to stand trial on allegations they'd bribed and influenced witnesses to give false evidence. No date has been set for the proceedings. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Zambia's High Court has launched an investigation into the presidential power transfer to Vice President Guy Scott following the death of Michael Sata. The High Court is scheduled to hear the case on tomorrow, Friday. This came after a concerned citizen petitioned the court, saying the country's current constitution was violated after Justice Minister Edgar Lungu, who was appointed interim president by then-ailing President Sata. Louis Mwape, the executive secretary of the Civil Society Consortium in Zambia, tells reporter Peter Clotty that confusion surrounding the power transfer is the reason his group has been pushing for a new constitution.
We have been pushing, first of all, for a new constitution that can allow for smooth transfer of power from the incumbent president in case of death like this one. And we have been advocating for a clause that should be like running mate for the vice president, which is not the case in the current constitution. What we know is that Mr. Lungu, who was acting president then, handed over power to the vice president. Both of them were using, people are claiming to say it is a coup d'etat, are using different parts of the constitution. Like government has used Article 38 and others are using Article 39, both of which require a court interpretation. That's why I think the court becomes the right place for the interpretation.
Is there confusion among the Zambian population concerning this defense and counter-defense about what happened if there were an alleged constitutional coup or not following the death of President Sata?
The situation in the country is normal, it's sober, everyone is going about business in a normal way. And I think there isn't so much of that kind of tension amongst the citizens of Zambia. We are all just waiting for the by-elections. Otherwise, the situation seems to be normal.
Yeah, but is this the right timing for a court case to investigate whether the transfer of power was legitimate or not, especially when you have less than 90 days for a fresh presidential poll to be organized by the Electoral Commission?
Well, citizens have right to review the judicial access. I think they have a right to understand what is happening. As citizens, responsible citizens, we should be focusing on is the how do we undertake the presidential by-election. Are they going to be legitimate? Are they going to be transparent? And are we going to have a president elected through a well democratic process? I think that is what should concern us now.
Do you think a ruling by the court will change the political landscape in Zambia?
Yes and no, in the sense that we have a president who is not eligible to stand as a president, a vice president who is now acting. So in that case, we expect to have a more legitimate election, a more democratic election.
Louis Mwape is the executive secretary of the Civil Society Consortium in Zambia. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with volleyball. Tunisia outplayed hosts Egypt by 3-1 to win the inaugural Africa Men's Under-23 Volleyball Championships in Sharm el-Sheikh on Wednesday. Libya edged Algeria 3-2, while Morocco dismissed Rwanda 3-1. At the end of the week-long round-robin contest, Algeria placed third, followed by Libya, Rwanda and Morocco. Turning to football, a comprehensive initiative to battle against racism in sports in general and football in particular, Global Watch, was launched in Johannesburg, South Africa on Wednesday. The global founding partners of Global Watch are the Nelson Mandela Foundation, the Doha Goal Forum, and Sekwale Foundation. Former South African Cabinet Minister Tokyo Sekwale outlines their objective.
Global Watch simply says
no to discrimination in all areas of all sports. We're saying the time has come for us to say it is enough that black people are insulted. When I say black people, I include all dark-skinned people worldwide. But it doesn't stop there. Racism and discrimination affects other nations as well. You find somebody says, I will not play Shinji Kagawa because he's Japanese. But it's more hurtful when it takes the form of direct colors. Global Watch is a call, therefore, action by all right thinking to take a stand against these societal problems which are spilling onto the playing field. That's one. Global Watch says we are having a summit here in Johannesburg next week to be addressed by, amongst others, Thabo Mbeki, FIFA, International Olympics Committee, to be addressed by members of the Human Rights Commission in the world, United Nations, but also we have people who have played sports. The objective of this summit is to arrive at a global charter. A global charter will have basic set of principles of do's and don'ts in sport. What do you do with that? Then there's a barometer. A barometer is to check adherence to the charter, and that is going to result in not just education and awareness, which is good, monitoring and prevention and advocacy, but in punitive sanctions. Let the sanctions bite to the extent of bringing criminal action, taking criminal steps against perpetrators of racism.
That was Tokyo Sekwale, the Global Watch founder, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, the 13th day of November.
The continued elimination of innocent students by Boko Haram is barbaric and evil against God and Allah. I therefore call on students and primary school pupils to declare fasting and prayers this Friday and Sunday, and the God of justice shall intercede for their education. I am Prince John Michelle Obaneko in Obudu Cattle Ranch, Cross River State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi issued a presidential decree Wednesday, giving himself the power to deport foreign crime suspects, a move that could affect three jailed journalists from Al Jazeera television. The decree said a decision to deport would be made in the country's supreme interest and to preserve Egypt's international image. In June, an Egyptian court sentenced the journalist to prison terms ranging from 7 to 10 years for allegedly backing the banned Muslim Brotherhood Islamic movement and spreading false information. Libyan officials say car bombings in eastern Libyan areas under control of the internationally recognized government have killed at least 4 people and wounded about 20 others. The officials say one of the attacks took place in the city of Tobruk, base of the contested Libyan parliament elected earlier this year. Another explosion hit an airbase in the city of Beda, which is home to the Libyan government. There has been no immediate claim of responsibility. And the World Health Organization says the number of people who have died of the Ebola virus has passed 5,000 out of just over 14,000 cases. The WHO made the announcement on Wednesday at its headquarters in Geneva, where it has been tracking the epidemic based in West Africa. That's it for this Thursday, November 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing everybody in Africa a very good Thursday.
What exactly is Ebola?
Can I catch Ebola through the air?
Are the people who have it contagious?
What is our government doing about Ebola?
What are the symptoms of Ebola?
You have questions about Ebola? Straight Talk Africa has answers. VOA presents Straight Talk Africa, Ebola, Knowledge is Life. A special town hall meeting with leading experts on the front lines who will answer many of the questions surrounding the Ebola outbreak. VOA presents Straight Talk Africa, Ebola, Knowledge is life. November 19th, only on VOA.
Hello, this is Sunday Shomari. Join me every Monday for your lighthearted show, Let's Talk. That's right, Monday at 17:30 UTC for interviews, great music, and a whole lot of laughter. Right here at the VOA Africa. Keep it locked. VOA Africa, don't miss.